is that right? K-O-4-Z-E-W.
Wayne, K-G-4-M-U-K, over here in Seneca. I just jumped back in my mobile, and I guess I'm going to go head to work and work 4 hours.
How that? It's good to have work.
Well, I've been doing mostly computer stuff for the last 5 weeks, waiting on surgery for Wednesday. I've been driving a truck for a good while, and I've been handling freight and all that good stuff, and I just happened to grab a piece of freight on the back of the trailer trying to help the customer unload it, and ended up blowing my gut out. Now they gotta sew me back up.
Well, I'm good. I've got a bad back. I'm blowing that out, so I'm always careful with lifting or carrying. Yeah, I know how that can be if you hurt yourself picking something up.
Is I've been doing that kind of work for almost 35 years. Never pulled them, strained or popped or cracked or popped nothing. And then I do one simple little something, and then it just goes poop. That's all she wrote. But been out of work 5 weeks, working, just going in the afternoon and kind of working in the office. And I'll work today and tomorrow, and after that, that's it. I'll get surgery and have to be out of work for another 5 or 6 weeks. Which, oh joy, it's me. I'll probably be on my ham radio probably every single one of them days.
Well, make the best of it. I hope you do have a speedy recovery, but it's not fun when you're down. I always have to have something going on. I always have to be busy. So what I do is computer consulting, and while I'm in between contracts, I'm like, all right, I got to start the honey-do list, and I get to dig in on the radios a little bit more. I have to stay busy.
It's funny. I took 60 foot of radio tower down, all my antennas down, everything was pretty much boxed up and put away. I put all new stuff up, and the weather started getting a little wonky here several weeks ago, so I just put my beam up on about 15 foot of tower section. And then I got my R9 Cushcraft vertical. I got it almost completely done and ready to talk on it. Still got to do some fine tweaking on the SWR. I did have it on the swap net for sale. I'm still thinking I'm going to sell it. As much trouble as that thing's been to tune, it's an HF antenna that does 6280, boy, it's a lot of work involved in getting those things. Every single one of them bands got to be as low as possible.
Fighting a similar fight right now, and the weather keeps getting in the way. I've got an NFED half wave, and I'm just trying to get it to do 40, 20, 15, 10, like it was designed for, and just having a bear of a time getting it tuned, especially with having one end way up high, and then I got to lower it down, you know, cut an inch, raise it back up, check it, lower it back down, cut an inch, and it's taking hours and hours. I haven't got it yet.
Which NFED have you got, by the way? A friend of mine had some quirks and problems with an NFED that he was using, and he ended up putting his NFED part, the box, part where coax hooks up. I think he's got it about seven and a half feet off the ground, and runs it up kind of in an L, and it works real good. Well, and he had it real close to the ground. He had to have it hooked up to an actual ground rod because it was so low.
Fuck. Like you said, about 6 feet above the ground or so. How high up was the other end of it? To answer your question, I have the ARRL kit that I've built.
The part that you feed, are you raising that to its highest point and then just running the in-fed wire straight across your yard and try to put a little bit of slope on it or whatever? If that's the way you've got it, that's kind of where you're getting a drawback on it. You feed it from the ground up.
Thinking that, because what I've got is I've got the feed line going up the house, the box on the chimney, that's about 30 feet up, and then the wire is a sloper down to a pole that's about 10 feet up. I heard it didn't matter which end was, as long as it was just off the ground. That's what I have so far. And I got it down to about 4.6 SWR, and that was, I'm targeting 7.1 megahertz.
Okay. And here's what, running that box, trying two different scenarios, see which one, according to how your earth ground is around your antenna feed point. This will change it by 50%, guaranteed. You can put that thing on a pole. If you got a pole that's stationary to the ground and it's, say, let's just say it's 7-8 feet tall, sticking out of the ground, it's real stationary. And let's just say, for instance, you do got a ground rod within a foot near that pipe. Set that thing up to where it's about 3 feet off the ground and hook the ground wire point of that, hook it to the ground rod, and then run the in-fed wire up to its highest point, and if it's a double insulator, like some of them are, tie it off and then run the other leg off whatever direction you choose to, and then try that. If that makes a difference, that's part of the problem. They can work both ways, yeah, but that will optimize better performance and better SWR readings. Now, granted, if you are, say, let's say you're 5'11" tall, and you can reach as high as you can reach, if you put it at that height, you won't even have to put a ground wire to it and still run it up and across in whatever direction. My friend did that when he was having SWR issues, and it cut his SWR down from, like, in the fives all the way down to less than two.
I do have the option of mounting the box. It's going to have to be close to the house. Now, whether it's high or low, I've got a corner. I could probably put it up against the house low with the feed line. Or I could give it about 10, even 15 feet. And then take the rest of the wire, and I want to go either horizontal or up from there, or can I go down to that 10-foot pole I have out in the yard?
If you mount it to your house, let's take this for instance. You mount it to the side of your house, and you mount it at 3 feet off the ground. Put you a 1 foot jumper on that box and put you a line insulator in between it and the ground. That'll get rid of any stray RF that you may encounter from transmitting, especially if you're running any kind of power whatsoever. Then just run that wire to any feed anchoring point that you can just get it ran. As long as it's just going up. That's all you really want to do. You know, it doesn't have to go straight up. It doesn't have to go, like, straight across the yard. But I would advise, you know, try to run it up and across in whatever direction you can to get some elevation out of it.
Certainly going to need the elevation on it to get it away from the physical ground. So, let's say I put the box against the house, 3 feet up. I took that counterpoise post, ran it to ground to bleed it off, and then just went at an upward angle as best I can, like up into a tree with the inset piece.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, if you need to go higher off the side of your house, you can do that. Any time, and I've had this, this is something that I've had to just about get a science degree in, any kind of infed, off-center dipole, or anything of that nature, I highly suggest you take a, and make you a jumper about 1 foot long, and connect it to the infed, and then put you a choke ballon in. Just a simple choke ballon. And that will keep any stray RF from coming back and getting on your line and coming in the shack.
So you're talking about putting the choke ballon like on the feed line and then have a 1 foot jumper go from the choke ballon to the box. Is that right?
Absolutely. 100% good satisfaction from that. And, you know, according to where your shack's at, where your window's at, I mean, if you wanted to, you could. You could mount that thing to where it's mounted above, let's say, 7-8 feet. You could still just leave it at that height. You wouldn't have to hook a ground to it. Because here's the thing you got to remember. If you got it up at a certain height, you already got ground off the coax. If you get it too high above the ground and you hook a ground to it, it's like you're creating an extra antenna.
Gotcha. Okay. So what I'll probably do is put the box up, again, up on the chimney, and then do for the feed line choke. Are you saying I should put it near the box, or should I put it back down, you know, give it some feed line to counterpoise, and then put the ballon, or I'm sorry, the choke, like right before it goes into the house?
And I would put the counterpoise as close as I could to it. And then again, if you're going to have it up that high, you could also keep that one-to-one down there at the bottom. And let's just say you got, just to be safe about it, what frequencies are you wanting to operate with it the most?
Most, I'm wanting to do 80 and 40. I'm sorry, 40 and 20. 40 and 20 is what I want to use the most. Maybe some 10 sometime, but I want to focus on that. 40 and 20. Tune it for 7.1 and tune it for 14.2. So they're on harmonic.
Here's something to try to test a theory and see if you do get a difference. Don't run anything less than 50 feet of coax. I'd highly recommend you have at least 100 foot of coax between the radio and that antenna. With that being said, if you need to have any type of counterpoise off of the coax coming out of the infed, I would say coming out, if you're going to leave it up there at the chimney and not going to have it down low, if you're coming off the chimney, I would say whatever length of coax it takes to come down to the ground and then have the one-to-one down there near the bottom and just let it radiate off that one, that piece. Or keep it up high and run a full length of about 100 feet. There's something that I have learned is running anything less than 50 feet, things just don't match up, and it's always caused problems for me. I've always tried to run 100 foot on everything.
Interesting, because you know, starting off in VHF, UHF, you ideally want the shortest feed line possible, but once you get into HF, that coax jacket, as you said, starts acting like a counterpoise or even a piece of the antenna. So it kind of flips your logic on its head. And it's a different way of thinking.
And here's the thing about it. If it was me, I would rather have that in-fed box mounted to the side of the house at my window, have a choke ballon on a one-foot jumper, and then the coax comes straight in the ham shack. Still, you need to have a minimum of 50 feet. Sounds bad. You could mount that thing anywhere you wanted to with 50 or 100 foot if you wanted. But I just think those end feds work so much better when they're at only about 3 to 7 feet off the ground. Getting them up too high just causes on that wire to its maximum highest point that you can.
Yeah, I mean, thinking about it, I could put the infed box, like, at the window, which would be about six, at the top of the window, which would be on the first floor, which would be about 6 or 7 feet up, and then take that wire and go upward, sloping upward with the wire. But then, like you said, if I want to add feed line to counterpoise it, that's going to be a lot of feed line that's just, like, coiled up right there. Where the wire goes into the house.
And you don't want the coil, and your best bet's just taking, you know, if you got 50 foot or 100 foot, I'd run that coax, just run it wherever I could run it. Run it out there and bury it if you have to, and then run it back. It'll just make the performance levels of a infed or an off-center dipole, it just makes them work so much better. They just short runs will give you grief. You won't be able to never get a match. It just creates a lot of headache.
KO4ZEW for ID. So I could come out of that window, run the feed line over to the corner of the house, and then, as you said, put the transformer box right there near the physical ground, and then take that wire and run it up into a tree or something like that.
Absolutely. That'd be the range of SWR ratios that you told me a while ago, you'll probably end up cutting them by more than half, and then you may not have to do nothing but maybe trim a little bit, and you may not have to do anything, and then you could just put a ground on it, even with it that close to the ground, and it still... It may counterpoise enough to really make a difference, but I would run my coax out the window. I'd run it down the side of the house and back, and then run it back up, and then run it up into the antenna, and have a one-to-one on it, choke ballon, and that way everything stays down there on the coax and don't jump around and get in the shack with you.
I'm thinking I could come out that window and go down one side of the house, turn, go down the other side of the house, you know, I could get a lot of feed line length out of that, have the box at the ground, and then out front we have a magnolia tree that goes up 40 feet or so, and then I could get that wire up in that magnolia tree and still have plenty of feed line to work with, and even enough feed line if I used 35 feet or 100 feet, that I could put that. I could also coil it up and add that choke bailing.
Yeah, it's just a science of everything. You got to just kind of get the right thing lined up. And, I mean, once you get that done, you'll be able to... It'll make it a whole lot easier to tune. I'm not even joking. I mean, it really would. I've went through so much in the last 20 plus years working on that stuff to the point where, you know, I just tell you straight up what to do and try one method and try the other. Try with the ground and without. Ground rods, I've learned one key thing. For every single vertical antenna that I've got outside, whether no matter what it's for, I got within 1 foot of that pipe is grounded to a ground rod by itself. Do never, never daisy chain anything. That's running from one ground to the next ground to the next ground and grounding each item. That's, you don't want to do that either.
Right. Everything needs its own ground rod. And we have ground rods all around our house for various things, like the cable modem and the air conditioner and stuff like that. I don't know if those rods are bonded underneath the dirt or not, but I could still, you know, run things independently to ground rods.
Like on my tower goes up. I got a ground rod for each leg, and it's grounded with a very large copper wire. And then 5 foot off of each one of those is another 8 foot ground rod in the ground. And then 5 foot off that again is another 8 foot ground rod. That way, lightning hits, it's got somewhere to go more than twice.
Well, you've got some good heavy radials on that tower, grounded radials. So that's great. My antenna I'm talking on now, it's a Comet GP15. So I've got a feed line coming down to that window at where I have one of those lightning protectors, which the lightning protection runs about an 8-gauge cable to a ground rod directly below it. And then the feed line comes to the shack. So I've got that one in a pretty good shape. I still unscrew it when there's a thunderstorm. But I've got the lightning protection. I feel pretty well on my VHF antenna.
Six months ago, I got hit by lightning. I didn't get hit by lightning. The telephone pole up the street that our cable line was on got hit. And when it hit up there, the EME static or whatever off of that took out everything I had in the ham shack. And I had all those antenna switches and had all that little cylinder protectors for protection. And I had everything get wiped out. And when I got to checking everything with a tester, the only way I could break the chain of nothing getting zapped was actually taking and unplugging everything in the house. Once you do that, you take that one little hint of a connection out.
Yeah, that makes sense. 'Cause even a strike like that, it can come in over your whole house ground through your electric, you know, your power line. I've had a similar situation happen with my cable modem, but sometimes they say when God wants your equipment, God's going to take your equipment.
Yeah, my station went south pretty hard. I lost about $18,000 in ham radio equipment in less than a millisecond.
It's brutal. I wonder if I can inventory, I don't have that much, but I wonder if I could inventory electronics under my homeowner's policy and see if they'll cover things like the computers, the radio equipment, TVs, things like that. Because, man, $18,000, that's a hit.
Homeowners will do pretty good with it. It's what I had. And I had everything itemized, documented, pictures, videos. I had everything, like, complete, totally documented. like every single item I had documented and itemized and photographed and matching serial numbers and receipts and charted stuff, and then turned right around and went to DX Engineering, pulled up every single thing. And I did a complete itemized list of you own it and you get a hit. Homeowners will do the thing, and I think it's up, they pay up to like 90%. And then once you've done all of that, and then they go over it and evaluate it, turn it apart, and then try to take and leave about $3,000 worth of it out of the equation, and then you call them out on it, and then they realize they messed up. Then they'd have them try to make it right, and I ain't going to go into that into a long story. But anyway, called them out on a lie twice, and then they fixed it, and then they made it right, and they ended up getting everything paid for.
All that documentation of what you had, plus, like as you said, what the fair market value of the replacement is, that was probably a big part of getting that claim fulfilled.
It was a nightmare. I ain't gonna lie to you. It was 4 months worth of biting my tongue, keeping myself steady and fast, and saying, look, this, you just got to telling me, and I recorded you. You just got through telling me everything's in the shack. If you had an EME, everything in the shack, everything's covered. If if half of it got wiped out, it's all wiped out, or probably could be wiped out. Claim it all. That was your words, and I recorded them when they told me. And because I know they're doing the same thing. So in the end, it was like anything that you can't buy to replace it, I was just having the conversation with them, and they was like, okay, well, get the next thing up above it. Just don't go overboard. Just get the next best, get the next thing that's an upgrade to that. So I did. And I got everything replaced. And, you know, I mean, I'm happy about it. I wasn't happy that I lost everything in there, but maybe one or two radios, but still, that's still a lot of equipment.
W for ID. Yeah, that's a lot of equipment, and sounds like you handled it right. And for those things, as you said, you can't replace, you just have to kind of go and establish some kind of fair market value for them, so that you can get something like it. As they say, you can't go overboard and, you know, jump a big upgrade on it, but as close to like as you can get. They'll probably be pretty reasonable.
I had like one or two radios, and then I had a few amplifiers. There was two of the radios that were so antique, but then when they went to look them up on YouTube and then seen them restored, they was like, well, we can't do that. You know, that's a little, I was like, well, you think that's bad? Go down the list and look at the FT-101. That's like the DX model. And she's like, yeah, the receipt says $4,100. I'm like, exactly. I was like, that antique radio ain't worth that much. Well, we probably need to take those few radios and maybe combine that into one. I'm like, okay, that's it. That works. And got a better radio, but I had to sacrifice 3 lost pieces for doing it.
Functionality stayed the same with what it got replaced with.
I originally was going to just take and, you know, go with a much bigger radio, and instead of getting this radio and this radio, I just let them give me the Kenwood TS-590.
See, I just got an ICOM 7300 about a month or so ago, so I'm trying to get this antenna up so I can use it. I've been able to hook it up, get it received real well, but I have to get that infed half-wave tuned so that I can transmit.
That's me. I'd just take it down, and I'd infeed it from the ground about 3 to 5 feet off the ground. If you do it between 3 to 5 feet, you are going to have to put it on a ground rod and make sure it's got a ground strap on it. If you go about 6-7 feet above the ground, you don't have to ground it. It'll be just high enough, but you do need to feed it from the ground and feed into the wire and have the wire going up. If you got it going up, you'll be golden. I think you'll get it tuned up a whole lot easier, too. It's KG4MEK if I didn't ID.
I'll get to some experimentation with it maybe this weekend. So if the weather's good. Look, I got to run. Good luck with your surgery, and I'll be looking here if you're on the radio. So it's a good thing to do when you're on the downtime. Good talking to you, Wayne, I think it was. And this is Ben. I'm down in Simpsonville. KO4ZEW, Kilo Oscar 4 Zulu Echo Whiskey.
I'm glad I got to get to talk to you for a little bit. I just jumped on 85 a little bit ago and headed north. But, yeah, I'm probably going to, maybe in the next week or two, go back to doing YouTube Live and do ham radio live on YouTube. So once I get past this surgery and get a little bit of healing going, I'll go back to doing some of that and just taking it easy. But, I'm just going to head up the road and head to work and work my four little hours. That's all they'll let me do is work in the office and punch a computer for a couple of hours. Oh, me. Well, have a good day and talk to you later. KG4MEK.
I'll look for your YouTube channel by your call sign, and I'll check it out if I can find you.
Yes. KG4MEK ham radio. It's pretty easy to find. If you go to QRZ, you can look at my QRZ page. And down there at the bottom, I talk about it, just that and the other and all that good stuff.
I'll give it a check out and hopefully catch you on the air again sometime soon. It's KO4ZEW. I'm clearing your final.
All righty. Well, you have a good day and enjoyed it. 73s. And hope to do it again. KG4MEK Mobile.